हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगराधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। जय। How you say? That's our, how you say, online speed of chanting. The offline is a little slower. Okay, so Paramatma Sundarbha, Adhyayana 4, further analysis on the position of the Jiva and the Supreme Lord. Adhyaya Prakashika. Having described that the material world is the effect of Brahman, and thus proving the Lord as the material cause of the universe, the author next elucidates that the faults of the Jiva and the material creation don't apply to the Lord. The first Adhikarana explains why the Jiva is entangled in the material world, but not the Supreme Lord. The Jiva and Amsa of the Lord gets covered by the material modes, while the Lord himself is never covered by the material energy. Owing to his minute nature, the soul has a tendency to get illusioned by the material energy. Just as a cloud, which is an effect of the sun, can create darkness on the earth and obstruct the vision of the sun from the eyes. To elucidate on this aspect further, the author cites the distinction between the sage, though the discussion between the sage Maitreya and Vidura in the third canto of Bhagavatam, where the sage stresses that the Supreme Lord doesn't identify with the material energy because she is not part of his sarup, and thus he is not affected by her, but the Jiva suffers due to misidentification with the material ahankara. Although in a purified state, he is a possessor of knowledge and bliss. What are we doing here? Having stated the reason for the soul's sufferings, the author clarifies in the next Adhikarana as to why the soul has to suffer in spite of the Lord's presence as the super soul in the heart. The author explains that the Lord can't be blamed for the soul's suffering because he is free from hatred or prejudice. Right? Because we notice here is that the problem of the, if the Lord is the source, then naturally then he would be covered by it and this and that. So those doubts are cleared. Generally, we don't have so much problem with that kind of an aspect. But this next point is okay. We're a devotee, the Lord's sitting in the heart. Why am I suffering? You know, that one comes up to us. So Jiva Goswami will, because you see, as we're getting closer and closer, the Supreme Lord, in order to shower his mercy upon everyone, appears in the material world in various forms. For the devotee who possesses intense love for him, the Lord reciprocates by performing pastimes to increase their bliss. For others, such as the demigods, demons, and the Rakshasas, the Lord showers his mercy through the time factor by empowering them according to the prominence of goodness, passion, and ignorance, respectively. Thus, the Lord is neither cruel nor partial to anyone. Yeah. In order to synthesize how the Lord simultaneously functions at different levels in order to reciprocate with the desires of the soul, and to conclude which is the highest aspect among them, the author next analyzes Bhagavatam according to the six principles of interpretation. Through this, the author conclusively established Bhagavan as the chief form and as the ultimate goal of all activities, right? So we can see as this is the purpose of the Sundarbha is to establish the principle how the Lord is the controller of his energies. The energies come from him, so he's the cause, he's the effect, and he's in control of these energies and unaffected by the energies. Because the first Sundarbha, I mean the Bhagavat Sundarbha, then we're seeing that in there, then we're establishing the Brahman as the absolute truth. And that Brahman is coming from Krishna. Brahman is a feature of Krishna. It's not that, okay, there's Brahman, and then there's no, there's Krishna. His effulgence is Brahman. And as Paramatma, then his expansion is Paramatma, then he controls all the energies. But we see here is that the rasa element is actually the main feature. That's the feature that brings it up. Very important is that the Lord, depending upon how he reciprocates, you know, as the person interacts with him, then that makes for the various rasa. So those who interact with him as the material energy, then he'll respond, you know, like you said, in the modes, right? But those who deal with him in devotion, he responds that way. So then he'll show the hierarchy of these. And then now we've discussed these aspects of Bhagawan, Paramatma, and Bhagawan, which is the highest aspect. Right? Adhikarna 1, Anuchedas 82 to 92. Jiva's entanglement and liberation, Adhikarna 3, Anuchedas 93 to 104. The Lord's actions are without hatred or prejudice, Adhikarna 3, Anuchedas 105 to 110. Bhagawan establishes the highest aspect of the absolute truth through analysis of Bhagavatam according to the Tatparyalingas. Right. Okay. So now we see is that when we finish that, now we're ready for Krishna Sandarbha to actually understand the glories of Bhagavan. Because here we're understanding, okay, he's the supreme, he's the origin, he's the Sarup, he's everything like that. So then, but now we're going to see is that what does that mean? Because as we say, he reciprocates according to our surrender and our understanding. Then we see is that that appreciation, maybe more or less, depending upon you know how much we understand of the Lord. But once we understand him as a person and how he as a person interacts with his energies as individuals, that becomes the highest understanding. Not just the position, his position, but his will, his activities, his desires, you know, all these things. Because otherwise, right now, basically we've studied, you know, his existence, our existence, the material world, and what's the relationship between them. Right? And only that much. But we haven't really seen about him as a person. So once we understand him as a person in the next Sandarbha, then you can deal with Abhideya, means how the devotees interact. What are the interactions? What are the things, what they do? And then appreciating that, then in the Preeti Sandarbha, then you can appreciate Prayojana or Prema. Right? So we see it just naturally is progressing, very, very logical progression. So Adhyayana 4, Adhikarana 1, the Jiva's entanglement and liberation, Anuchedas 82 to 92, Adhikarana Prakashika. Having proved that the relationship between the material creation and the Lord is that of the effect and the cause, where the cause, Paramatma, is unaffected by the faults of the effect, material world. The current Adhikarana differentiates between the Lord and the conditioned Jiva by describing how the Avidya Shakti of the Lord entangles conditioned Jiva but fails to influence the Lord himself. The Anucheda 82 details as to how the Jiva is covered by Ahankara, using the analogy of the sun and the clouds. The power of the sun, revealed only by the sun, becomes a dense cloud, a form of darkness on earth and heaven for the eyes. Darkness of the earth and heaven, yeah, for the eye, though arising from a portion of the sun. Similarly, the material ahankar arising as an effect of Paramatma Shakti, revealed by Paramatma, becomes an obstacle to revealing the Sarupa, the Jiva, who is a small amsha of Paramatma as Tatastha Shakti. The next two anuchedas elucidate that this ahankar is destroyed by inquiry of Paramatma, and having destroyed the bondage caused by the ahankara, produced by maya, the jiva is reinstated in its original sarup and gains realization of Paramatma, named Achyuta. The principles of the jiva's conditioning is further elaborated in the Anuchedas 85 to 92 by citing the discussion between Vidura and the sage Maitreya in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Vidura first inquires from the sage whether the Lord is affected in any way by the modes when he enacts pastimes in the material world. He further questions Maitreya Rishi as to how the jiva, who possesses knowledge as an intrinsic quality, comes under the influence of the material energy, and why the living entities are subjected to so many miseries and misfortunes in spite of the Lord's presence in their hearts and the supersoul. Maitreya first addresses the doubt concerning the Lord. He explains that though Maya is the energy of the Supreme Lord and is the cause of ignorance for the jiva, she is not part of the sarupa of the Lord and hence can't affect him in any way. After that, the sage Maitreya answers the question, how is it possible for the jiva possessing pure knowledge to become covered by the ignorance of Maya? He explains that just as the reflection of the moon perceived in the water appears to be quivering, though the original moon is fixed. Similarly, the conditioned jiva appears to be suffering because of his identification with matter, though the pure jiva is the possessor of knowledge and bliss. Anucheda 82. Having explained that the world is the natural Shakti of Paramatma, and hinting that the jiva by knowledge can destroy the world, his relationship with it, right? It means, because the point is you always have that aspect of the final dissolution, right? The four stages. So the final dissolution. So there's always the idea that by that you destroy the material energy, right? Because there's always the idea of something you don't like, you want to utterly destroy. But Moa, it's your being controlled by it or being influenced or having an attachment to. Because if you say, no, I want to destroy it, that means there's still an attachment. And because I'm not getting what I want, there's anger and aversion, therefore then destruction. That's why anger comes after frustrated desire. So here is that it's not like that. So this idea that you see things in a particular way, that this is good, this is bad, this is my friend, this is my enemy, all these things are coming up because of attachment. But actually, it's all the Lord's energy. And so then there is no bad, consideration, right? Like that. Good is what's connected to the Lord. Bad is what's not connected to the Lord. That then becomes the actual basis. Okay. So therefore, it's this relationship with it that gets destroyed. The author explains the ahankar, which creates an upadi and is made of Paramatma Shakti, right? Because to funk means if you have the upadi, it means you have the identification that I am servant to the Lord, then you can function, right? Because without knowing who you are, how do you function? If you go into the kitchen and you can't identify anything in the kitchen, how do you cook? You have to know what's a pot, what's a knife, what's a grater, what's a peeler, what's a potato, what's a mango, all these things. You have to be able to tell the difference. Otherwise, you can't cook. So identity must be there. There is individuality. And based on that individuality, then there's a relationship and interaction, right? And results. So if you have that as the identity, you can perfectly function. But when we identify as material energy, then we need to have an identity that places us within the context of the material energy, right? So we're seeing it as material energy. We're seeing ourselves as material energy. So the false ego gives us an identity. Then we think I'm this, I'm that, I'm so many things, right? So what happens is the spiritual identity becomes replaced. And so the spiritual identity functions because it's Krishna's energy. It's just a matter of if we acknowledge it's Krishna's energy or not. That's all. Like that. Okay. But it is an obstacle revealing the jiva sarup, right? This upadi, the material upadi, in order to teach rejection of its adhyasa, imposition, by which one can attain liberation. Right? So because that's been imposed, then you can get free. So what's the point? We've come to the material world because we see things separate from Krishna, that we will enjoy things separately from Krishna. So that's not a reality. That's an illusion. Therefore, to function within that, you are given an upadi, a false identity, by which you can pursue that if you like. But at the same time is then the whole process is how to remove that upadi, so that we can then again act in our natural position. So that's the meaning of liberation, is to be free from material entanglement. It doesn't mean merging in Brahman. It means that's how people want to interpret it, right? Does that make sense? You know, people, when you say something, like if I say, yes, we're going to, how you say, give free meals to everybody. So everyone's going to interpret in a different way what meal means to them. You know, so if your interpretation is in line with what I'm giving out, then you're very happy. If your interpretation is different from what I'm distributing, then you'll be unhappy. Right? So that's the thing, is that everybody comes up with their idea. So therefore, when we say liberation, people think merging in Brahman, or they think free from material anxiety. They don't think, no, on the spiritual platform, that you can naturally now serve Krishna. Right? So it's just a difference in how we apply that. The cloud is a product of the sun and is revealed by the sun. But the cloud covers the eye, another portion of the sun, right? Because the eye sees by fire, and so fire comes from the sun, right? The effects of Brahman are revealed by Brahman, right? So therefore, the cloud is coming from the sun, but it's also then being that cloud being cleared is coming by the sun. Like you can see, by the effect of the sun, there's the moisture that in the morning is mist or a cloud. Then as the sun comes up, it by the power of the sun, it clears that cloud. So that means the illusions created by the clouds created by the sun, it's removed by the sun. So that's the whole point, is that, you know, you can say is, no, I'll remove it, but you didn't create it. You know, that's the whole point. You're practicing the shaky cam, videography or something. Okay. Similarly, the ahankara, the effect of Brahman, makes the jiva, a portion of Brahman, bind himself up. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.4.32. Yeah, Udriti, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura. Quote, if everything is Brahman, because everything is the effect of Brahman, how can the jivas, portions of Brahman, be covered by ahankara, the effect of Brahman, which is illusory, right? So the thing is, okay, the jiva is part of Brahman, okay. Everything's coming from Brahman, okay. But how can the jiva be covered by this illusion, right? And if you get that, then okay, how he's covered. But then why isn't Brahman covered by illusion? Because jiva is coming from Brahman. Right? That'll be the next question. So now we deal with the first question. And being covered, how do they become bewildered? An example is given. The rays of the sun transformed into clouds become rain. It is said, oblations to fire go to the sun. From the sun, they transform into rain. Rain transforms into food and then into living entities. You know, so that's the cycle. In karma, that's the cycle. That's how it goes. That's why then all these yajnas and that have to be performed, because this cycle then goes nicely. And so then the living entities are engaged, they become elevated, and then other living entities come into the circle, you know, or once you go up, then you come back down and come back up through the circle. So they're accepting, yes, I'm going to go through this cycle. You know, just like you accept, yeah, I'm going to go to work and sit there all day, you know, and then drive back and, you know, it's just accepted, you know. Is that, you know, everybody's miserable, but everybody accepts that's just the way it is, you know. Yeah, oh, how's your boss? Oh, terrible. And yours? Yeah, same, you know, like this. So, you know, it's just that's life, and they laugh about it. You know, hence the proliferation of pubs. You know. The product of the sun is a cloud. Thus clouds are manifested by the sun. They cause a covering of the eye, blocking the sun. Though the eye is a portion of the sun as well, right? So the jiva being a portion of the Lord is that he becomes covered by the cloud that's there. The jiva can't see the Lord, even though the jiva is coming from the Lord, right? Similarly, ahankara, an effect of Brahman, binds up the jiva, a portion of Brahman. Atma bandhanaha means the jiva binds himself. Right? So that's the point of independence, is that we have that opportunity, we can do that. Right? You know, so that's the thing, is if you say, oh, but why did he give us that independence? Okay, if you want to be like a kid and, you know, and you're controlled and everything. No, no, I want to do whatever I want to do. Okay, then, you know, the independence, then you get this point. No, no, I don't want. So I want the freedom to do whatever I want without any obligations. So you see, it's not very well developed as a philosophy. The rays of the sun become transformed into clouds and pour rain, for it is said, Agnau prashtahuti samyag adityam upatishtate adiyaj jayate vrishtir anam tatah prajaha. Oblations offered to Agni go directly to the sun. From the sun comes rain, from the rain comes food, and from food comes progeny. The meaning is this: the power of the sun revealed, darshitaha, only by the sun, right? The sun reveals the sun, nothing else reveals the sun, becomes a dense cloud, ghana, a form of darkness on earth and heaven for the darkness of heaven on earth and heaven for the eyes, though arising from a portion of the sun. Oh, darkness on earth and heaven for the eyes, okay. Though arising from a portion of the sun, right, from the sun rays. Similarly, the material ahankara, aham, arising as effect of Paramatma Shakti, Brahma Guna, revealed by Paramatma, Tad Ikshitaha, becomes an obstacle to revealing the Sarupa the Jiva, who is a small amsa of Paramatma as Tatastha Shakti. Brahmam Shaktasya. Udvriti. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura explains about the spiritual identity of the jiva in Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita as follows. The jiva's revelation, the jiva's relation with the temporary world is like that of a traveler at an inn. Yukta Vairagya, the proper way to deal with the world, arises from a correct understanding of the relationship between jiva and the material energy. As long as a correct understanding of temporary and permanent does not arise, the bound jiva cannot perform proper activities. That's why you see Upanishad means you have to study the material and spiritual knowledge together. Then you actually understand who are you, who's the Lord, and what is this material energy and what's the relationship. Then by all that, then you can properly understand. Like Sahajiya say, oh, we don't have to know all this technical thing. We just have to know rasa, and that's it, you know. According to Lord Chaitanya's doctrine, the jiva's identity and difference from the Lord and the world's difference and identity with the Lord are both established as truth. Since this cannot be adjusted by limited human reasoning, this, you know, means we all say, no, no, but it's like this, it's like that, and so many things, you can't do these things. But the point is this, no, you can't adjust this. This is the way it is. It's not that because we've said it's different that now it becomes different. No, this is the way it is. Since this cannot be adjusted by limited human reasoning, this eternal difference and non-difference is called achintya, or inconceivable. Though it is inconceivable, logic and reasoning are not dissatisfied, for it is reasonable that God can have inconceivable power. Whatever is established by the Lord's inconceivable power can only be understood by the Lord's mercy. The ancient sages have taught that logic cannot be applied to the inconceivable. For in inconceivable matters, logic cannot be accepted as a proof. Those who cannot grasp this are most unfortunate. Chaitanya Shikshamrita, chapter 1. Right? So there are people who can't grasp it. No, no, my logic can figure out everything. But the sad part, that unfortunate part, is that how they're so much an illusion that they think that their ability is enough to understand everything, when they can't even understand what's going on, you know, in just general things happening in life like this. So they can't even figure out what the person next to them is thinking or doing. You know, is he favorable, unfavorable? Can I trust them or not? Or this or that. And then how are you supposed to understand God? So that's a difficulty. So the point is if you say it's inconceivable, but the point is there's not a problem that the Lord, it's not illogical to say that the Lord is inconceivable. He has inconceivable power. In other words, if he has unlimited power, we can conceive the words unlimited power, but the actual experience of that unlimited, that we can't fully deal with. We can deal with a part of it. Like even if you're feeling the unlimited, you're moving through that unlimited, but you're not seeing the limits of it, where you've come from, where you're going. You just see that it's very vast, like the ocean. You know, if you're out in the middle of the ocean, you look all set, it's unlimited. So that much experience you can get. So it's enough for the jiva as an experience. But the problem comes is that you can't fully understand the Lord. So him being beyond, he has to reveal himself. So it's not illogical to say the Lord has inconceivable power, right? No logician can say it. So therefore, for what's inconceivable, that you have to grasp from the Lord himself. In other words, Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. You can't understand by your own logic. That means Anuman won't work. Senses, of course, that's limited. That's accepted. But then Anuman won't work either. So that's where then all these six schools, they get very much into their Anuman aspect, how they're going to perceive and everything like this. But this is pointing out, no, it goes beyond that. So you can't understand it. Right? Vritti. In the next Anucheda, the author explains how the jiva, illusion by the material duality, can overcome it. Anucheda 83. Given up the adhyasa, mistaken identity, does not take place by itself, but by the strength of inquiry about Paramatma, right? As we said, the sun reveals the sun. By the potency of the sun, one has become covered. And by the grace of the Lord, then one becomes uncovered. To express this, the previous example is continued. When the cloud produced from the sun is destroyed, the eye can see its own form and the sun. Similarly, when the spirit soul destroys its material covering of false ego by inquiring into Brahman, he realizes the Atma and the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.4.33. Udriti, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. When the ahankara, a covering on the jiva, is destroyed, one realizes Brahman. This is explained through an example. When the cloud is destroyed, the eye sees the sun in its true form. The human eye, and not the eye of the owl, sees the sun. Similarly, the eye of the jnani, who has some bhakti, sees Brahman, and not the person without bhakti. Bhaktyaham ekaya grahya. I am only achieved by bhakti, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.21. When ahankara is destroyed, one realizes Brahman. But when you get rid of the false ego and understand who you are, you realize Brahman. But only bhakti can take you beyond that. And so now the path of jnana on its own, trying to understand these, is very difficult because of the renunciation and the amount of knowledge, like you see, is that the Shankarites were complaining to Lord Chaitanya that as a sannyasi, he's supposed to be studying Vedanta Sutra all day and speculating on that, and being very, very renounced. But they're not complaining about his renunciation. But so such a difficult process, and it's so dry. All you can do is understand that you are, that there's Brahman and yourself. But it's through bhakti that you can understand the Lord. And since bhakti includes the platform of spirituality, that's the sandini potency, right? That's what everything's, that's the, you can say the manifestation of everything. That's the basis of everything. So Krishna is the support of that aspect of his shakti. And so everything then is, so if you only understand Brahman, you only understand that as a support. But what is supported? That you don't see. That's only through bhakti. Because then the dham is revealed when one gives up material desire, right? And liberation is still a material desire because it's about getting rid of the material, not about gaining service to Krishna. So through bhakti, then one can naturally, that includes the sandini potency. It includes activities of the samvit, and it includes the experience of prema of the Lie to me. Right? So that makes sense. The cloud produced from the power of the sun is not destroyed by the power of the eye, but by the power of the sun. It's not that you sit there and look at, give the evil eye to the cloud and it goes away, right? Ahankara flees or is destroyed by inquiry about Paramatma, Atma Ja, by his mercy. This shows that Ahankara is not destroyed just by knowledge gained by a person. Vivartavad does not accept this point. Ahankara is here an upadhi on the jiva and does not refer to the ahankara arriving from the jiva's roop. Right? The eye sees the real form of the sun after obtaining qualification by the strength of the sun. Without, right, because only by the sun do you get the qualification to see the sun. So the sun produces the cloud. We only can see this cloud, not the sun. By the sun, the cloud is removed. That means then the sun creates the opportunity for you now to be able to see the sun. So it's still qualification. You know, because without the sun, you can't see the sun.
Maharaj?
Yes.
So it was said that Ankara is destroyed by if we inquire about Paramatma. So
yes.
This shows the importance for a student to inquire.
Yes, yes. That's why it's Pranipata Pari Prashna.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because this aspect is to inquire means there is life, there is desire to understand, there is desire,
yes,
desire to finish the ankar, you know?
Yes, yes. Yes, so, that's very important. That's why we saw that when you were discussing about bhakti, you know, it was coming up in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about the bhakti and that, then Lord Chaitanya is pointing out that there's that attraction to Krishna. That's the real game. Prema is just a side effect of that.
Yes.
Because prema will be the experience of that. But the point is what's driving the whole thing is your attraction to Krishna, that rati. So that's what we're trying to attain. And so there, and then in that position of rati, that kind of rati that the devotees of Vrindavan have, then we want to develop that greed that we want to have that kind of attraction to Krishna.
Yes.
And therefore following in their footsteps, right? It's not that we want their greed and so we'll come in and throw them out and then we'll stand in their place.
Yes.
No, we're following in their footsteps. So that's rag anuga. So that greed they have, then we want that also. So that rag, we're following in the footsteps of their rag.
Yes.
You know, so that rag, that's their life. That attachment to Krishna, that's their life. And so we follow in the footsteps of that attachment.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So that then brings us forward, is that it has to be appreciated that one must have that kind of desire that comes up. It's that we know it's there and, you know, we set it as an ultimate goal. But the point is just like you say, as you know, the kid, you know, you say, yeah, it would be great to have, let's say, you know, a Rolls Royce or something. But unless that desire is focused upon and then you act on that, then it doesn't happen.
Yes.
So in the same way, it means, of course, it'll, as you get purified, you get closer and closer too. So the whole point is if you are actively trying to desire that, that just means everything will move quicker. And if not, you don't have to worry because you could say, oh, but I never had that desire and that. But then you should at least desire to have that desire. And then as progress, then these things will come up. Or if not, then the desire to desire will come up, you know, and so you should desire to desire to desire, right? And so then with time, then your heart gets purified, then you'll desire to desire, and then more purified, then you'll desire. you know, or however far back you have to go, right? So that's what we're dealing with here.
And marriage, this is part of our free will.
Yes.
We can choose to desire or not.
Yes, because that's the whole point that is there, is the desire is the main focus. Is what is your desire? Is it connected to Krishna or it's not connected to Krishna? Because there's going to be that willpower. And so then where are you applying that willpower? What is your desires? What's your attachment? So what's your willpower? You know, will means what you want to do. What's the activity you will perform to accomplish something, you know, based on who you are and the position you're in?
Yes.
Right? So that's going to establish that. So that's the point. Do we desire to please Krishna, following the footsteps of the Brajvasis? Or do we desire to be, you know, some big, you know, big walla in the material world?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the... Okay. Is mukka, somebody's a big mukka, is that Yiddish? No? Okay. Okay. The eye sees the real form of the sun after attaining qualification by the strength of the sun, without covering of great darkness caused by the cloud. The eye then knows its own sarup, sarup ikshate, or manifests its power. Sometimes while seeing itself, the eye also sees the sun. Similarly, one becomes qualified to meditate on Paramatma. So with the sun there, then you can see yourself and you can see the sun. So that's the whole point. So there are those who then, you know, without bhakti, then they only see themselves. They'll only see the aspect of Brahman. They won't necessarily see the person, right? So it's only the sun rays that are important to them. But then with bhakti, you can see beyond that. Yes, sir.
So in our case, Maharaj, self-realization would be actually the realization of Paramatma. Is that right?
You can say yes, but Paramatma is that feature, localized feature of Krishna, where he takes care of this whole process that we're talking about. So it's Krishna who's Paramatma. Right? So that means then what's being brought out is that that's what we'll see at the end of the Adhikarna. It's about Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right? And that will bring us to the Krishna Sandarbha. So what we're saying is without bhakti, you'll only know Brahman. With bhakti, then you start to know Paramatma, but it's actually it's Bhagavan that you're trying to know. So for the yogis, they may only know up to there, or they're going to Vaikuntha, they know up to there. But the aspect is that we're being given the opportunity that we can know beyond that. And so if that's there, the farther we're seeing, then the quicker the whole thing works, right? Because if it's going by desire, you're simply switching your desire from the material desire of wanting to enjoy Krishna's energy separate from him, not seeing it actually as his energy, to the desire of wanting to please Krishna through the activities of engaging his energy in his service, because we see everything in connection with him. Then if we have that desire to develop like that, then that just makes it that much quicker. No?
Yeah.
Because the process of bhakti is so perfect, even if we don't have that kind of focus, it itself will give, because that's the thing. It's not that we produce bhakti. So bhakti is self-revealing. So bhakti will reveal bhakti. So by the power of bhakti, you become qualified for bhakti. You know, so it's the process and it is the result. So it works out very perfectly. Yeah?
Thank you.
Okay. Anucheta 84. This is explained further. O king, when the illusory false ego that binds the soul has been cut off with the sword of discriminating knowledge, and one remains fixed in one's sarup with firm realization of achyuta, the supreme soul, it is called adyantika pralaya. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.4.34. By the previously mentioned sword of discrimination, bondage caused by the ahankara produced by maya, not the ahankara inherent in the jiva sarup, is cut. Right? So now he's also showing out that there's a ahankara means that there's an identity. So in the jiva sarup, it's not talking about that. But you can say, oh, but that's not false ego, that's real ego. But ahankara just means an identity. So when you see the identity in connection with the Lord, then that becomes real. And when you see the connection not in connection with the Lord, that's unreal. And so that's true, because you can say, but why would it be the same category? Because the point is you don't know completely the Lord, and you're not even worried about all those things. You know, Mother Jashoda is not worried about how Krishna is controlling all the worlds and everything. She just doesn't care. So she's focusing on the Lord in that particular aspect, according to that taste. So that's the specialness, is that taste that is exchanged between Krishna and the devotees. That will come up, you know, a little bit later. So that kind of taste is then what is actually important. So what's talking about here is that it's not talking about the identity of the jiva in his sarup is given up, because that's what the impersonalist will want to say, is that no, you give up the identity, you're not even an individual, you just become Brahman. So that whole thing, that's rejected, is that no, the inherent, the hankar in the jiva's sarup, that's inherent. That doesn't disappear. One remains situated in one sarup, avastishtate. Not only that, one has realization, anubhavaha, of paramatma, atma, named achyuta, right? Because atma means Krishna. Then to distinguish, because it's Krishna and he is Atma, so that means everything is Atma. But then there's a difference between Jivatma and Paramatma. So depending on the context, if you're talking about the Jiva, you may refer to the Jiva as Atma and then Paramatma. Or if you're talking about the Lord, you can just refer to him as Atma. Right? Sukadeva spoke thus, the verse, Udriti. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains the difference between liberated and conditioned souls in Vaishnava Siddhanta Mala as follows. We're losing our colons.
Yes, Maharaj.
We're losing the colons.
Oh, all right.
There also in the previous one, there was one like that.
Okay, Maharaj.
Question: are all souls of one type, or are there different relative levels? Answer: there are different relative levels among the jivas. Right? Means relative levels, just in comparison. But otherwise, then, as jivas, they're all the same. Question: how many levels are there? Answer: there are basically two. The level of the jiva's real and eternal form, sarup, and the level of the jiva's dream of a false material designation, upadi. Right. Question: what is the false means? Basically, there are two, because you can say is that the one that still has upadi, but he's now in becoming through the grace of the Vaishnavas has understood the real position, then they're all known as the fortunate soul. But they're still within the conditioned soul. But in that way, then, so you see is that they're going to be different levels. So basically there's two. And then within those who understand their sarup, then you're going to have varieties there also. Who's in Vaikuntha, who's in Goloka, who's in Vrindavan, all these different. So there's two, the conditioned soul and the liberated soul. And then within those, there might be varieties. Does that make sense? Question, what is the false material designation of the soul? Answer, the soul's material designation consists of all the forms of Maya, illusion, that encapsulate the soul as a result of having turned away from Krishna. Question, why don't all souls remain in their true position, free from material designation? Answer, those souls who accept nothing other than service as their eternal occupation never lose their transcendental position, sarup. Their attraction to Krishna is everlasting. But those who become obsessed with their own separate so-called happiness turn away from Krishna and are immediately shackled by Maya in the prison of the material world. Right, so that's why we see, as you talk about the eternal occupation, this is the difference between the two. So we say, okay, yeah, that's there, you know, but what about, you know, practical stuff and that? That's the whole thing. Since it's the descending process, you simply change the consciousness. These other things fall into place. You change the consciousness. My eternal occupation is service to Krishna, but I have to maintain the body, the family, or this or that. Those are maintained by these external occupations of the conditioned nature. So therefore, I am engaged in those things simply because they maintain the position so that I can serve the Lord. So then all occupational duties then become in line with the Lord. They become therefore useful. Otherwise, they're a waste of time. They just keep you conditioned. Yes, sir.
Maharaj, we see that there's sometimes a change of consciousness, but there's no change of action. So there's a gap in between. And can we actually say that there's a change of consciousness if there's no change of action?
Means the change in consciousness means, yes, you're going to see the action, but the action doesn't necessarily mean that the action itself has changed. The quality of the action may change, just like you're cooking and eating, but now you're cooking exactly the same thing, but now you're cooking for Krishna, and then offering to Krishna, and you know, and honoring the prasad. But the preparation cooked and the technique doesn't change, or how you're going to eat it doesn't change. You know what I'm saying? It's not that, okay, yeah, but before, as a conditioned soul, you're going to eat the, spaghetti with a fork, you know, and twirl it up. But then now, as a realized soul, you're going to use a straw, you know, and stick one end in and suck like that. You know what I'm saying? It's not like that. So in other words, if the activity that you're doing can be engaged properly in the Lord's service in the form it is, the action doesn't change. So externally, you may not see the difference. That's why then someone changes their consciousness, but from externally, it looks like they're the same, you know, family person they were before. They still have their business, they're still making money, the family's there, they're still buying shoes, taking the kids to the dentist. You know, it's all going on, you know, like that. And so, remembrances of, past insanities, you know. So that doesn't change, but you'll see is, let's say, what you're doing isn't useful in Krishna's service. Then you'll see is that as the consciousness changes and you have understanding of the value of that, then you'll see a change in their action. Does that make sense? That's why it's recommended that the human being situate himself in piety, because piety, basically, as it is, it can be used in devotional service, right? And then as you advance, then there may be some aspects of that piety that aren't so important, like, you know, Pitri Puja, you know, Puja to the forefathers and some other things. Those can be dropped because you're already worshiping Krishna, right? So that's why that's recommended. And impious activities aren't recommended because those are, you know, those don't really naturally take up engagement in Krishna's service, right? So that therefore you may not see. Now, if it's a matter of you understand that change, but you don't make the endeavor to do the action that what would naturally go with that, then, they say like Janmashtami is a special day, so therefore then we should do some special service. So you understand that, but you don't do anything. Then you can say yes, it hasn't manifested, but at least there's an understanding. But with time, as one gets purified by following the process, then you'll see, then they'll start to do something. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Yeah. Okay, where were we? Questions. Yeah, so point is that those who have that natural attraction to Krishna and take up that identity as their eternal occupation of doing everything in connection with Krishna, then they move forward. They maintain their surup. But those who, so their attraction to Krishna is everlasting, right? So that's the whole point, is the attraction. The rati is what's important, like that. But you see is that those who become obsessed with their own separate happiness, turn away from Krishna and are immediately shackled by Maya in the prison of the material. So they're already in the material world. Even though physically they might be in the spiritual world, they're already in the material world. And so their attention will turn away and they'll just get into stuff like that. And, they'll just be busy with whatever it is, taking care of the house and the kids and all that stuff, all the stuff that Jatila and Kotila and Abhimanyu and Govardhan Majumdar are talking about, Does that make sense? It's not like they're standing there and goes, why doesn't anybody listen to us? No, they're quite happy. They're quite absorbed. That means there are living entities who are like that. Right? So it's just a matter of who you want to follow in the footsteps of. No? Yes. Question. Why doesn't Krishna protect spirit souls from the unfortunate fate of falling down into the material world? See, so all these questions that they've already been asked like that. Answer. Krishna gives the spirit souls who are his extended parts and parcels a free will. They may choose between loving him or pursuing selfish illusions. The soul chooses to misuse its independence. Then its surup or essential eternal form is covered by dull matter. In this stupefied condition, the soul cannot perceive its own blissful nature. Right? So that's the meaning of it's self-revealing. Because when by knowing the sun, you know yourself, then the soul is self-revealing because it already has a surup, it has potency. It may be very small, but it's still potency. Like that. But then if you have bhakti, then you'll realize that supreme soul and you'll move forward into that.
Right? Maharaj?
Yes.
I mean, this book, Vaishnava Siddhanta Mala, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote with a question and answer, it's like all this type of question inside. It's dealing with.
It doesn't deal with the question on whether we should open a temple in Paris or not, or whether we should worship the deities or just put them in a box. And no, he's not necessarily answering all those questions.
But he explained like we can say a novel, question and answer. All the question about what.
Oh, it's just question and answer. It's just question and answer. It's not. There's no people. It's not about. The Jiva Dharma is like a novel. This is just question and answer. Because this is Vaishnava Siddhanta Mala. It's just all of the various, points that may come up.
Yes.
For the Vaishnavas to understand where any doubts may come or anything like that. So he's already dealt with that. Because you're dealing with the modes of nature, the doubts are always going to be the same ones.
Yes. Yes.
Right. You can get into further detail. So they deal with the major aspects of them. You're going to have six schools of philosophy by which you can be deviated. Which aspects from which school, what combinations, that's going to be there. But if you deal with the main points, it's already been dealt with. Now, Mataji has a question or no?
No. All right.
Yes.
Also, this book is written in a Navapramayas, like 9 chapters. In each chapter, one pramaya and whatever doubts are there in that dealing in with that
Pramaya. Yeah, the Navaprameya, that's given by Madhvacharya. So that's basically taking the Dasamul, where you take that Dasamul and you take out the sweetness that's there, yes. Right? The rasa aspect. And you make that into a nice club. And then you whack the Mayavadis over the head with it. Right? So Navaprameya is meant for defeating opposing arguments. And Dasamul, you know, is meant for, it will do that, and it will also nourish and bring you to prema. So basically, Navaprameya is from the basic, from the standpoint of Sambandhagyan. It's not, it'll explain Abhideya and Prayojana, but it's explaining it from the position of how its relationship, how you're connected, how that connects to the Lord and everything. So it's mainly from that angle, because you're not getting into Abhideya and Prayojana as practices because the person has not accepted yet.
Yes.
Right? Dasamul is then, it's the complete form of it, because it will do that. It will also show you how to practice, and it will also give that full result. Right? So that's why it's not necessary. We think, oh, they're much more developed than that. No, they're not. It's just that it's already, you can, like you saw here, that, you know, there's a question. Why do they fall down? This is why. Why does he protect them from that? Because they have their finished. One sentence, two sentences, you're done. We make it into the last, what was that? Oh, man, what was that one? Maybe it was 78. Yeah, I think that's when the whole, it became a big issue about, you know, how the soul fell and, you know, where did they fall from and all that. You know, up to that time, they, you know, were happy with what Prabhupada said. But then, you know, by asking the wrong questions to, you know, individuals that they shouldn't be asking those questions to, then they bring in some other points and then they get bewildered. And so now we've been dealing with that since. So that means 78, 88, 98, 2008, 2018, 42 years. But the Acharya deals with it in one sentence. So
it's so simple. It's so simple.
Yeah. So that's interesting. Any doubts that can come up in any one of these, you know, it's like that there's Praman, you know, that there is the Shastra, any doubts that can come up. You know, and then the position of God, position of the jiva, the position of your material energy, any doubts that can come up, and then they're all covered. But as you'll see, is that because we've studied all these things, then we hear this one sentence and, oh, okay.
Yes.
But if we hadn't studied all these things, so you wouldn't be convinced. So it's not like, why didn't we read this in the beginning? Because we wouldn't understand it, because this is Vedanta Sutra level of answer, question and answer. Does that make sense? So that's the... Yeah? Okay, good.
We can see that some acharya like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they are quite, we can say, compassionate to help the living entity to understand the thing.
Yes. That's why, and the fun part is he's the one that is bridging the cultural difference between the East and the West.
Yes.
And this is what he's using. You know, but we think it's no, if we dress in karmic clothes, that'll bridge it. If we dress in karmic clothes, the whole world will become devotees.
Yes.
You know, like that. You know, it's kind of like stupid. No, you go out, they want logic, here's logic. But as Prabhupada said, all the points that are made in all of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books are in Chaitanya Shikshamrita and Jiva Dharma. Just these other books may have some details there, but the principle that it's based on is in both of these books. You know, so where you know, you can apply the detail and that, then it comes out, then we're using. But we're not doing a full study of the book. We're only doing a full study of the other two, the ones, you know, Prabhupada recommended. Because I remember one day I was discussing, okay, you know, so we're going to use this in Bhaktivinoda and then this one and that one. And then Sahotramara says, why are you doing that? And says, Srila Prabhupada said, these two books contain all the conclusions. You know, and I think, oh, really? Okay, then, yeah, like that. Question: what is the eternal form of the Swarup? What is the eternal form, Swarup, of the Jiva? Answer: the Jiva is made of eternal consciousness. Its only purpose is to serve Krishna. By assuming its service role, the Jiva is endowed by Krishna with a form of pure bliss. Right? Then if you serve, then you get the transcendental form. If not, then you end up with the material form. Your choice. Question: are there levels of souls who are situated in their forms of eternal service to Krishna? Answer: there are five eternal relationships with Krishna. These constitute levels of eternal existence. Right? Because they're levels of existence because they have the different flavors. Question: what are the five eternal relationships with Krishna? Answer: the first is the neutral, Shanta relationship. The second is the servitor, Dasya relationship. The third is the friendly, Shakya relationship. The fourth is the parental, Vatsalya relationship. The fifth is the conjugal, Sringara relationship. Question: please explain these terms in greater detail. Answer: the Shanta relationship does not involve a personal relationship with Krishna. It is passive but reverential. The Dasya relationship is personal, but it consists of a reverential mood of active service. Right? The Shakya relationship surpasses the limits of reverence, becomes friendly and informal. Because friendship means that even in a situation that you should be formal, you're not. Like, let's say you have two close friends like that, even if they're in a formal situation, they're going to sit there and in a much more subdued way and quiet way, they're going to be whispering to each other and goofing on everything, right? They're still going to be doing that. Like that. So that's the aspect. It surpasses the limit. So the one is it's active, meaning it's active in a personal relationship. The Shanta, it doesn't involve a personal relationship. It's not impersonal. Krishna is a person. They're a person. But it's not about having a personal relationship. It's about appreciating how Krishna has, you know, that aspect of him having embraced everything as his, and that nothing has rasa separate from himself. So that is the concept. So they're basically appreciating Krishna's rasa as one, how everything is his. Right, we think, oh, when you say one, it means it's impersonal. No, one as personal means it's all his. Like if someone says, it's my house, all the stuff in it, it's mine. It's personal. It has the variety, but it's one, it's theirs. So that's the original oneness, not this foolish idea that oneness means it's impersonal. That actually doesn't exist. Yes, sir.
All right. So can we say that the Shili can appreciate all other personal relationships between Krishna and his devotees, but they're not inclined to any of those categories?
Yes, exactly. Because see, now if you're taking the principle of Krishna's one rasa, remember yesterday or day before, we were bringing out that aspect that Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about how Krishna is rasa. Let me see. Okay. Then, okay, Krishna is rasa. This is the Chaitanya Sikshamrita, chapter 7, or part 7, chapter 7, right? Krishna is rasa. He has unlimited knowledge and unlimited powers. For him, nothing is impossible to accomplish. By his inconceivable power, which reconciles contrary elements, he is eternally one rasa and many rasas. So that's the point, is that's achintya power, this inconceivable. He can be one rasa and many rasas simultaneously. He is eternally one rasa and many rasas. As one rasa, he enjoys by encompassing everything as his own. In that state, nothing has separate existence as rasa other than himself. So everything is his, and therefore everything has rasa because of its connection with him. So the Shanta rasa appreciates this oneness aspect of the Lord. That's why it mentions that it has that aspect of impersonal, is that it's just all, everything's connected to Krishna, but it's personal. There's still, it's about Krishna, the person. So the person encompasses everything. It says, but he is simultaneously many rasas. Thus, other than his personal rasa, there is rasa of others as the second, and the combination of his rasa and others' rasas. Right? So basically what you're seeing here is that it's a combination of his rasa, and he's encompassing everything, with someone else's rasa. That makes the third combination, right? So experience of these last two produces the bliss of pastimes, right? In other words, Krishna encompasses everything as rasa. It's him, and it has no existence of rasa other than him. But at the same time, as each individual who is his energy that he is encompassing as rasa, being an individual, then they have a specific rasa with Krishna, right? And then, so that's the second aspect. The third aspect is then Krishna in his position then interacts based on their rasa, and he reciprocates their rasa with him. That becomes the past, that they have that rasa, therefore they want to serve Krishna, and then him reciprocating it, that is the pastimes. So we see in there is still that Krishna, his encompassing everything is still there within that the last two. So they're appreciating how that individual is still within Krishna's rasa, and then he's interacting with them with his rasa. Does that make sense? So they can very much appreciate the rasa of the different devotees and of the Dwarkavasis and the Brajvasis and of the Brajvasis, the gopis, and they have no problem with that. But like you said, but they don't have an interest themselves in taking up that position of rasa. They don't move. Their position is that of appreciating Krishna's rasa as one. Even though that position of one may have all these features within it. That's why it's so unique, is that this is the real understanding of oneness. What the Mayavadis give is a total bewilderment. That's why we become so distracted by it, and it takes so long to purify one of that attachment. But once one gets attached, then one sees this is oneness. But the point is that when it becomes active, like in the personal, where the servitorship wants to do a personal service for the Lord, that's when it becomes dynamic. So you can say is neutrality, you know, is passive. Shanta is passive. Well, starting with Dasya, now it's active. So it's a personal relationship. The other one is they accept Krishna as a person. They appreciate everything about his person. So it's not anything specific. They may have, of course, a particular sphere of appreciation that they like within his personal rasa. But they don't move into the aspect of wanting that dynamic aspect. And so then that's why then Rupa Goswami sometimes considers the four rasas. That's then, you can say, dynamic. But then when you get to the third, the Sakya relationship surpasses the limits of reverence and becomes friendly and informal. That's the whole point of, I can't remember the word, but it's one of the words that's used, you know, to define the rasa. And it just means that there's no, is it pranaya? This means even in the situation where there could or should be formality, there isn't. No, vishramba. Vishramba is the word, I think. Vishramba. Like that. They just, huh?
Vishramba is, it means it's closeness. Vishramba, yes, means it's intimate.
Yes, intimate. So it's closeness in that even though others may, it means the demigods are coming down. When Krishna comes back in the afternoon from the cowherd fields on their way back to Vrindavan, then because he's not performing his pastimes in the forest, so they take the opportunity, the demigods come down and offer prayers to Krishna. And so the cowherd boys, having been trained properly by their parents and everything, then they behave themselves. But once the demigods leave, you know, they're sitting there. Then you see the guy with the four heads. Oh, come on. What about the guy with the snakes and the tiger skin? Yeah. And they said, what about the guy with the elephant head? You know, and he's like, who are these people? You know, and so they just, you know, they couldn't care less. But, you know, they're cultured enough to, you know, they've come to offer respects to Krishna. They stand around and that, but it's not that they all sit there and like this. And Vaikuntha immediately, everybody's like this, you know. We're not talking this like we use. We're talking this one, you know, where the arms are out straight. This is down at the heart and, you know, wham, you know, that's the mudra. We don't use the mudra. We just kind of put the hands like this. But the mudra is actually down here. The arms are straight. The arms are in perfect line with each other. You know, the this is back. You know, dang, that's Vaikuntha. Immediately, someone comes in, bang, everybody's in that mood. But here, they don't care. Even in Dwarka, if someone comes along and shows he's the Supreme Lord, bang, they're all there again. But in Vrindavan, they just sit there, you know. You know, you're the Supreme, you're that. What do you mean? I beat him in wrestling today. What are they talking about? You know, stuff like that. So that's the point. Vishramba, that's what then makes it there. Therefore, Rupa Goswami then mentions the three. Because they don't have that it's all about intimacy. Then of the three, then there's one. Right? Because it is the Adiras, so it accompanies all the glories of all the other four are already within that. So they already appreciate Krishna. They already render service. They have that friendship. They have that care. And they have that intimacy. Is that good? Yeah. Okay. In the Vatsalya relationship, loving concern for Krishna overfloods the limits of carefree friendliness. Right, so the carefree friendliness, they just have a good time. There's no worries, right? Right. And then here is that they loving concern. They want to take care of Krishna. So that comes up. In the Sringara relationship, loving concern intensifies into an intimacy of the most brilliant beauty. Like that. So yes. So we see is that naturally comes up. You know, so now we've explained the material, I mean, the spiritual, how you say, within the basic categories of conditioned and liberated. So within liberated, then we've gotten the five main divisions there. And so the next question we'll take is into what are the divisions within the material consciousness, right? So you see the subdivisions. Okay, so we'll end for today. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.